from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on this morning's forum program, the Wells Fargo shareholders meeting in San Francisco was the site of a demonstration earlier this week, with hundreds of activists raising issues of executive pay, corporate tax rates, and foreclosures. But the protest was significant for another reason. It was the debut of 99% Power, a nascent coalition of various local and national groups that is hoping to inspire a nation into political action. This hour, we'll examine the who, what, and where of the 99%, how it differs from the Occupy movement, and the status of ongoing political action. Forum is next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's forum program. In this forum hour, we take the pulse of ongoing political activist movements, including a number of recently formed groups which have cropped up from being inspired by the Occupy movement and are looking more toward direct action, such as what we saw earlier this week in San Francisco, where a demonstration took place outside of a Wells Fargo shareholders meeting. And joining us to begin the discussion is Kevin Fagan, reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle, who specializes in social issues and is with us this morning by phone from Contra Costa County. Kevin, welcome to the program.
Howdy.
Hi. Actually, I met your mother recently at a talk I gave. She's very proud of your work. You should know that.
Oh, my God. That's really nice. Yeah. I'm proud of her.
I wanted to find out about, since you were there at the shareholders meeting, give us sort of the repertorial basics. What was the nature of this direct action protest and really what was accomplished? How many were there?
Well, I was writing the story and helping in coverage with several reporters, and we had one reporter, Carolyn Jones, who was actually in the meeting itself, which I thought was the most unusual aspect of that whole protest. They had about 1,000 people show up to protest the shareholders meeting, and it's a tactic that we're going to see more of as the spring unfolds. The group that calls itself now more 99%ers than occupiers these days is interested in picketing shareholder meetings and going to the homes of corporate CEOs and picketing there, and really stepping up the pressure and doing it in a nonviolent really assertive way to try to get across their message of economic inequities.
There is a message perhaps even more specific than that. Weren't they talking about foreclosures and executive pay and things like that?
They've got lots of specifics. It's interesting. It's kind of coalesced over the winter into a series of demands. And they go from arcane to, overt. Foreclosures, of course, is one of them. They want loan modifications made more available. They want principals on home mortgages drawn down in an aggressive way by banks. They want tax laws redrawn so that they're more progressive upwards. They want even to the point of wanting local jurisdictions to pass laws that would penalize the owners of foreclosed homes, i.e. banks, for leaving the foreclosed homes empty. And that way the intention is to both bring money into the cities and to force the banks to, number one, not foreclose more, and number two, to turn the properties over more quickly, because the idea is, they say, that the banks are sitting on a lot of foreclosed homes waiting for the market to come back, and then they'll turn around and sell them for more profit, which they view as unfair, seeing as they foreclosed on people who could have stayed in them.
They asked to talk with John Stumpf, the chief executive, didn't they, but did not realize that or didn't achieve that?
Several people talked with him just for a little bit, but not much.
Those were mainly small shareholders, though, weren't they?
Yeah, they were mainly small shareholders. There were 250 of them in the room itself, and about 15 popped up to their feet and started yelling slogans and, mic check and that kind of stuff, the stuff that we've been familiar with over the winter. And they were promptly thrown out by security, so the dialogue was kind of truncated.
How many people were there, all told, do you reckon?
In the boardroom was 250, and outside were about 1,000, which was a pretty good crowd for a Tuesday morning, middle of the week, and they came from everywhere. It was remarkable that people flew in from Minnesota, from they came down from Oregon, lots from Southern California, all over the Bay Area. There are about 30, 99% and Occupy-type groups all around the Bay Area. So there's a lot of people to muster when you have an issue like this and an action like this.
And you mentioned going to executives' homes. I noticed, for example, on their website, they talk about the fact that they put Stump's salary down, the fact that he doesn't pay any taxes. They give a lot of those specifics about executives.
Yeah. The idea is to highlight this and then, of course, elicit outrage at this. We in the media can do a lot of stories about inequities, and you know, I've done plenty of them over the years because it's been true. There's been this huge widening gap between the rich, the middle class, and the poor. And but what they want to do is really highlight the fact that like Stump gets $19 million salary, which is actually a pay cut from last year by $1 million. But that's still $19 million, and they want people to know it. And some corporations pay no taxes. And, Wells Fargo made a record profit last year, while a lot of people still feel we're in the recession. So by taking...
Excuse me, Kevin, is that why they centered on Wells Fargo, because of the record profit? Or?
Well, that's one reason, but they're doing Bank of America pretty soon, and then they're going to be doing Chase, and they've got all the big ones in their crosshairs.
Kevin Fagan, again, with us from Contra Costa, who's a reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle, and his specialization is social issues. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Thanks.
Appreciate your being with us. We have Rebecca Tarbottom with us. She's executive director of Rainforest Action Network, and Rebecca Tarbottom is the executive director of Rainforest Action. She's also one of the leading national spokespeople for 99% Power, which was an active participant and organizer behind the Wells Fargo shareholder demonstration. 99% Power is organizing more protests, as you just heard from Kevin Fagan, throughout the spring, including May 3rd at Verizon in Alabama and May 9th at Bank of America in Charlotte, North Carolina. And Rebecca Tarbottom, good to have you with us. Welcome.
Well, thanks for having me, Michael.
Let me give us a sense, if you could, first of all, of where Spring Power and 99% Power, there are a number of names here that seem to coalesce. Can you sort it out for us?
Yes. Well, I'll start with 99 Power, which is a coalition that really came out of the recognition that Occupy had opened up the space for a new conversation about the role of corporations in America. And we were bringing together workers, retirees, families fighting their foreclosures, the unemployed, students facing huge crippling student loans, and environmentalists and immigrants all together to take the demands for ecological and economic sanity, essentially, to the most powerful corporations in the country. 99% Spring was essentially an effort to train a very large number of people in in nonviolent direct action as a way to actually inspire people to get out on the streets and really put their bodies out and with their voices to really confront corporate power.
And this is civil disobedience. This is to be separated certainly from the kind of anarchistic violence that we saw in Oakland completely.
Nonviolent direct action is very firm in its commitment to exactly what it's called, nonviolent direct action, yes.
So it's the old kind of training. It's like, it goes back to civil rights work and so forth, doesn't it, really?
It does. There's a bright line between those two things.
And you're training, like, how many people do you estimate?
Well, we estimate that about 75,000 people were trained all around the country through over about a two-week period, most of them in person, in trainings in church halls and in people's homes, ranging from a five-person gathering to a 100-person gathering. And really one of the most exciting things about it was that it brought together people from all different walks of life who now are seeing each other at places like the Wells Fargo meeting, where they're actually being able to put their training into action right away.
What do you think you achieved at the Wells Fargo meeting?
I think we were the main thing we achieved is that we were able to actually speak truth and speak directly to the decision makers. There's very few opportunities that people in America have to speak directly to the 1%. And outrage at corporations is growing. The previous speaker named that. And the shareholder meeting is a time when an average person, just for the cost of one share or a few shares, is able to go in and speak to the board of directors directly and express their concerns about the company, the way the company is doing business.
That includes things like so-called say on pay, which we saw at Citibank was somewhat effective. That is having a say on executive salary.
Exactly. We saw 55% people vote against the executive pay package at Citigroup, which is the first time that anything of that scale has been realized. And I think that was just an indicator about how showing how people are taking their concerns directly to corporations, and we're actually winning. And it's really building a lot of momentum behind that.
And this is not a leaderless group like Occupy. I mean, you do have leadership. You have, for example, not only your group, Rainforest Action Network, you have Greenpeace, Move On, United Auto Workers, a presence of a lot of leadership.
Right. This is really an unprecedented coalition of labor groups, environmental groups, immigrants' rights groups, and a whole wide array who are coming together really around this shared understanding that we're relatively wasting our time if we're spending all of our time on Capitol Hill with our legislators, because really, behind the curtain, real power is held by corporations. They're pulling the strings. They're paying for our politicians, and in return, those politicians are, subsidizing their activities. And what we're trying to do is go directly to where the power is. This is something that has been on our radars for a long time. Rainforest Action Network has been corporate campaigning for 25 years. But this is the first time that we've seen such an upsurge of energy around taking people's concerns directly to corporations.
A lot of this came out of the Occupy movement, I realize, as you've noted, and even before that, out of protests in Madison and the Keystone Pipeline protests mm-hmm. in Washington, D.C. What about the argument that you hear from some people in the Occupy movement? I know many of them have joined hands with you and part of your coalition, but some say that the encampments are being sort of co-opted and Occupy is being co-opted.
I think that The way I would frame this is that 99% Power is working in parallel with Occupy and everything that Occupy has been able to achieve. There is no way that anybody could replace what has been achieved by Occupy. The Occupy movement is strong and vibrant, and we're a coalition of organizations that are essentially working to take some of the energy generated by that and focus it directly at corporations. People's movements like Occupy are really the foundation of social change, and nothing can replace that. And it's really important that coalitions like 99% Power support people's movements like Occupy, but as well learn to work in parallel with them in tandem. It has to be an ecosystem approach to change if we're going to get anywhere.
And again, we have Rebecca Tarbatten with us, who's executive director of the Rainforest Action Network. And we're going to bring Joe Gunfest into this discussion. He's former commissioner of the Securities and Exchange Commission, now senior faculty at the Rock Center for Corporate Governance, and Frank Professor of Law and Business at Stanford Law School. Joe, welcome to the program.
Michael, thank you very much for having me, and apologies I can't be with you for the entire hour.
Well, we're glad to have you with us. I'm particularly interested in hearing your perspective on just, the efficacy of these kinds of demonstrations that we saw earlier this week at Wells Fargo. Could they really bring pressure to bear?
I was able to hear just a portion of Rebecca's presentation and have a couple of points where I'll disagree and agree. First, I think it's entirely true that shareholder activism has become much more effective over the last several years. And in fact, in much of my scholarship, it's a direction that I've been pointing at for more than two decades. But I think to suggest that the action of the Rainforest Group and Occupy and the like really are at the core of this is to take credit for that group, those groups' activity that they may not actually deserve. The reality is that many of the largest institutional investors in the United States are also disaffected with governance structures, with financial performance, and with compensation arrangements at, in particular, some of the largest banks. If we focus for a moment on the 55% no vote for the say on pay at Citigroup, that 55% no vote didn't come about as a practical matter because of anything that Rainforest or any of the other groups did. It came about because many of the largest and most sophisticated institutional investors in the world looked at the governance structure at Citigroup and said, guys, you've got to do better than this, and we're going to express that point of view by expressing a negative opinion with regard to your compensation.
So more of this is from within than without, I think is what you're saying, isn't it?
Absolutely. So what we have here is correlation, and the correlation should not be confused with causation. Clearly, if I were working with Rainforest and the like, I would be claiming causation. It's a perfectly rational thing for the Rainforest Group to do. But the reality is when large multi-billion-dollar shareholder groups reach the conclusion that compensation at Citigroup is not working, that we need to do better risk management at Citigroup, the calculus is really extraordinarily different from the logic that I just heard expressed.
Could I get your response from you, Rebecca Tarbaden?
Sure. I actually don't disagree. A lot of the groups that are involved in 99% Power have very robust inside as well as outside strategies. And I think that's part of the strength of this effort. And that is not to say that there hasn't been incredible work being done by advocacy shareholder groups and institutional investors over the past several years. And I think you're absolutely right that that's been growing in its efficacy. And what we're seeing with 99% Power is essentially taking it to the next level and pairing that really good inside work with strong, vigorous outside work as well, and engaging a wider swath of the American public, because really that's what it's going to take to really be able to shift the way these companies do business.
So, Joseph Grundfest, if you were to be advising Rain Forest Action Network and 99% groups and to have real impact on the boardrooms, on the corporate boardrooms of banks, what would you tell them?
Well, I think I'd share two messages, a positive message and a negative message. The positive message is speak to the actual interests of the people who hold the majority of votes in these shareholder votes. And these interests are primarily economically driven. Develop the argument that by following a piece of our agenda, you can actually improve shareholder returns. And these shareholder returns drive the money that California employees are going to get in retirement from CalPERS and CalSTRS. At the end of the day, the argument is economic. If it's possible to explain how enhanced social responsibility actually does improve the bottom line and actually does increase profitability, earnings per share, and stock price, you're going to get a lot more of a positive response from the major institutional community. On the negative side, much of the street action, much of the street theater, much of the disruptive activity that occurred over the last few days, I think people need to recognize that there is, unfortunately, a material probability that this will turn off some of the major institutional investors. And people also need to understand that if this kind of activity really does become systematically problematic, corporations can respond simply by not having physical shareholder meetings. There's no requirement in the law that you actually have a physical meeting at any particular place. It's entirely possible to migrate shareholder meeting online so that there will be no physical place where Occupy or any other group could show up for the meeting.
Isn't it also true that the say-on-pay votes are essentially non-binding?
Yes, those votes are entirely precatory, but although they are non-binding, they are not ignored. In my experience, every corporate board that gets a significant negative vote on say-on-pay has several serious meetings, and they ask themselves the following questions. Number one, why are we getting this negative reaction of our shareholders? You really can't afford to ignore it. Number two, should we reach out to the largest shareholders and ask them, what is it in particular that offends you, and what changes can we make that you think will wind up working well for you? And if you actually look at the empirical data, you do see situations where corporations change their plans. You know, in particular, in Britain, where the legal regime is a bit different, the CEO of Barclays just said, look, I'm going to give up half of my comp package until we return the bank to profitability.
We're talking with Joseph Grundfest, who is Frank Professor of Law and Business at Stanford Law School, also former commissioner of the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission. What do you think about the kind of targeting that's being done by Rainforest Action and these other groups of executives, not only essentially putting out for public consumption the kind of money they're making and the kind of taxes they're paying or not paying, as it were, but also even going to their homes?
Well, you know, different people are going to have different opinions about that. You know, at one level, some people argue if you're a CEO of a large publicly traded corporation, you're a public figure, and we can protest against you the same way that we can protest against senators, congressmen, governors, local aldermen, and the like. At some point, you know, the reaction is going to be quite negative from many people who I think these groups need to maintain as allies if they actually want to effect change. On the other hand, if you want to get a lot of attention for activities that will be viewed in a mixed manner, certainly understandable how that can attract publicity.
I want to bring another voice into this. Maria Poblet is Executive Director of Just Cause. They're a Bay Area organization which works on economic justice issues. And Maria Poblet, good to have you with us. Welcome. Maria Poblet, do we have you there? No. Okay.
Well, hello?
Yes. Oh, you are there.
Hi.
Okay. I thought for a minute you disappeared. I'm glad to have you with us. I wanted to actually find out just not only about your involvement, but again, this question of efficacy. You were there at the Wells Fargo demonstration?
Oh, yes. And my organization, Causa Justa, Just Cause, has been mobilizing to Wells Fargo shareholders meeting as part of a broader regional coalition. This is our third year approaching the shareholders with this platform of demands that we're making. And with all due respect to the previous opinion, power concedes nothing without demand. It was Frederick Douglass that said that. And the community groups most impacted by this, shareholders or not, were stakeholders, and we're making these demands that advance the needs of our society as a whole.
I know, actually, you were involved in helping organize this protest, and you're sounding pretty optimistic about its effect. I mean, how can you measure or quantify what that effect is, or can you?
Well, we are pulling together the data of what was our impact in terms of numbers. But the reality is we are in a place as a movement that we haven't been before, a really positive, connected place where the 99% know each other, know each other's names, know each other's organizations, and are coordinated for the first time at this national level to say the 1% have their organizations, they have their coordination, they have their division of labor, the 99% need that as well. And this is the beginning of us building that infrastructure, building a social movement that can really reach to the root causes of these problems and actually fix the systemic problems.
Well, I know you've been particularly concerned about getting some kind of a moratorium on evictions and protesting privatization of prisons. Have you made progress on either?
We have made progress in the hearts and minds of the American people. We've made alliances with people all over the world that are impacted by this economic crisis. We've also built the level of investment, involvement, and leadership in the communities most impacted. Because for people to write reports and make recommendations is one thing, but for everyday people who are struggling to keep their homes, to see themselves as engines of social change, is a fundamental shift in our society that's leading us in the right direction.
Let me do this, and we'll get a final word from Joseph Grundfest, who has to leave, but let me give you the phone number, because I know there are many of you who would like to join this conversation, and if you would, and if you have questions or comments, please feel free to do that. Our toll-free number is available to you. It's 866-733-6786. We welcome your calls, and again, to call us toll-free, 866-733-6786, or email forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments you have on our website by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on the segment, or you can go to our Facebook page. A number of ways to communicate, and we'll go to your calls and emails when we return after a brief break. But I want to get a final word from you, Joseph Grundfest, and that's just essentially building consciousness is what we're hearing from Maria Poblet, and ultimately that can have an effect, can't it?
Oh, absolutely, and I'm entirely in favor of building consciousness, but if the mechanism of action that people are talking about is affecting change through shareholder action, you've got to look at how that works. The reality is the consciousness that you have to change is the consciousness of the shareholders who actually have the right to vote at these meetings. You then have to ask yourself, who constitutes that constituency? And you look at it, it's the large institutional shareholder base.
Again, Joseph Grundfest, good to have you with us. Appreciate your being with us. We'll be back and hear from you when we return. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. The Wells Fargo shareholders meeting in San Francisco was the site of a demonstration earlier this week. Hundreds of activists calling out issues of executive pay, tax rates, and foreclosure. And the protest was significant for another reason. It was the debut of 99% Power, which is a nascent coalition of various local and national groups hoping to inspire really the nation into political action. And we're examining what 99% Power is and how it differs from the Occupy movement, and really looking at the landscape of political action today. We had Kevin Fagan with us earlier, reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle, who specializes in social issues. And we also spoke with Joseph Grundfest, who is former commissioner of the Securities and Exchange Commission, now senior faculty at the Rock Center for Corporate Governance and Frank Professor of Law and Business at Stanford. And we have Rebecca Tarbutton with us, executive director of the Rainforest Action Network. She's executive director director not only of Rainforest Action, but one of the leading national spokespeople for 99% Power. And Maria Publett, the executive director of Just Cause here in the Bay Area, an organization which works on economic justice issues. And we're going to bring you into this discussion. I want to just go back for a moment, though, to Rebecca Tarbatten and tell us, I think I've tried to outline here what the specifics are in terms of the coalition and what it would like to see and what kind of pressure it wants to bring to bear. But perhaps you could outline even more for us what you want to accomplish or what you want to achieve. One of the problems and criticisms of the Occupy movement was it was much too splintered and there were people holding up signs for, especially around Wall Street, hundreds of things. You're much more lasered in on what?
Well, the goals of our, the goals of our coalition really boil down to three things. One is that we want to win on specific campaigns. We want to win real improvement in people's lives around the country. So that's the really, that's the top level goal. The second one is we need to involve many more people. We've seen what we can do with tens and maybe even hundreds of people on the streets. And now we really, we need to engage millions in this effort if we're really going to see a transformation of our economy and our political process. And then finally, we want to really move the national conversation about the role of corporations in America. I think that it's a, at the gut level, Americans know that the concentration of wealth and power in the hands of fewer and fewer individuals and corporations is inherently what's driving the economic as well as the ecological crisis. And so we want to be sure that that's embedded in people's notions of change and that we're actually lining up the way we're pushing for change to that reality. We have coalesced around some very specific demands that are common to all of us and that we're all behind with each other. And that goes from corporations paying their fair share of taxes, wanting corporations, especially the banks, to fund the future and not fossil fuels. You know, obviously the climate crisis is utmost importance right now, and it, ecological crisis is intimately tied to the economic crisis. We can't solve one without solving the other. We want to see corporations create, not killing, jobs. We want our homes restored. And we really want to get corporate money out of our democracy. And that's a really fundamental problem that we're seeing right now and why we're not spending our time on Capitol Hill.
Are you going to be involved in the presidential race as you mobilize or any other political races, or are you staying free of that?
99% Power is very much oriented towards focusing on corporations. Rainforest Action Network is not involved in the presidential race. There are, of course, many organizations in the coalition that do have political strategies, but we're not one of them.
And Maria Publett, part of really your mission is to advance the Black and Latino communities. And how do you foresee that happening as a result of, again, building consciousness and bringing these mobilized protests to bear?
Sure. This is a great opportunity to see the shared experiences that Black and Latino communities have. We find ourselves often pitted against each other in competition for the lowest wage jobs, the what's left of affordable housing in a market as expensive as the San Francisco Bay Area. This happens a lot. And here's an opportunity to see what we have in common, to see that foreclosures, evictions, lack of access to basic services, they're all brought together in this fight against the 1%. We have that in common. That's the genius of Occupy Wall Street, is the Wall Street part. Occupy is a tactic, but Wall Street is a target. And it's a target that you can trace back a lot of people's lived experiences, struggles with systemic inequity. They all point back to Wall Street. And that's the genius and the opportunity of this moment. It allows communities that would otherwise see themselves as suffering in isolation to see themselves as protagonists of social change. When you think about the last time we won any big demands that advance the cause of poor people, of economic justice, that was during the economic depression. That's when large-scale affordable housing got developed, when unemployment benefits were created, Social Security. Those were won by people's movements. They weren't won by these special, extraordinary things. It was ordinary people that did extraordinary things, and that's what we need to do now.
Again, Maria Publett is Executive Director of Just Cause, and let's go to your calls, and we'll begin, Buck, with you. Good morning.
Hi. We had one historical quote. I want to give another one. Gramsci said, what serves the interests of the class in power is viewed as common sense, and what challenges it is viewed as blasphemy. And I'm not surprised that the fellow from the SEC views what we're doing as blasphemy. I was one of 100...
I don't think he ever used the word blasphemy, by the way.
Well, you can correct me on Gramsci, but I misquoted him. Excuse me. I was one of 150 people from all over the country, including 11 of us from Occupy Berlin here in San Francisco, that were legal shareholders of Wells Fargo. We were not permitted access to a shareholders meeting for a company for which we held shares, number one. Number two, that guy from the SEC is full of baloney. Occupy Berlin and Ace San Francisco have forced Wells Fargo to postpone the property options of scores of people in the foreclosure process who would have lost their homes. Small victory, but a victory nonetheless. Power concedes nothing without demand. And I was going to ask my sisters on the panel, give some other examples from your work, especially Rand, of where corporate power made corporations do something, even if it wasn't in their direct economic interest immediately.
Rebecca Tarbon, you want to answer that?
Sure. You know, we've been focusing on the banks for a number of years now because we recognize that they're one of the leading drivers of climate change by financing fossil fuels, whether that's coal or oil or natural gas and so on. And we have seen that over the last few years, with some very substantial outside pressure and some very strong internal negotiations, as well as bringing impacted people directly to the banks themselves at the shareholder meetings or in meetings with them, we've seen the banks willingly commit to phasing out much of their financing of mountaintop removal mining, which was actually a substantial part of, you know, a substantial income stream for them. Now, they did that partially out of a recognition that it was the right thing to do, I would argue, but also because we were able to make a really strong argument about the portended end of that industry and the fact that it's going to be really dying in this country very soon. I think what's really important about this is that we are able to, when we bring a strong argument to corporations that is both, as the speaker said about shareholder action, is both based on a sound economic argument, but also is speaking truth about the real impacts of financing on people's everyday lives and their communities and the atmosphere and their health, then we actually can see that it does create change. And what we're trying to do with 99% Power is actually add up all of these transactional incremental wins that we've been able to get slowly with corporations over the past 10, 20 years, and drive in this moment towards more transformational change. So really changing the relationship of corporations with our economy and with our political system, and thereby being able to have a leap forward.
Let me bring another caller on. Jane, that's you. Hi, welcome, Jane.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, great. I was one of the Occupy San Francisco activists that was there yesterday, and I think that from watching all the different tactics that the unions and different organizations did, I would have to say that Occupy definitely had the most novel ones. I mean, activists have been doing rallies and these types of things for years. But the Occupy tactic of being a highly mobile force that can shut down and stop shareholders from walking in is definitely novel. And I think that needs to be addressed in the fact that I think we really did scare Wells Fargo and the powers that be that Occupy can come and help shut down a meeting.
Well, I thank you for that call, Jane. And I'm actually going to go back to Rebecca Tarbon on this because I'm looking at a web comment from a listener named Kate, and I had indicated earlier that there are those in the Occupy movement who feel that perhaps 99% is – the 99% movement is maybe co-opting. This is a listener who writes – first of all, she begins by saying, why is this reporter the person speaking for the movement and what is happening in the movement? And I should say that Kevin Fagan, who was here with us earlier, was not speaking for the movement. He was speaking as a journalist. But then she goes on to say, why is someone from Occupy not represented on your program? The differentiation between Occupy and 99% movement is false and divisive. I say this as someone who has been involved in Occupy since last fall and as someone who hosted a 99% spring training. I'm disappointed by this coverage. And I'm struck by those comments, Rebecca Tarbon, as well as the last caller, Jane, again, separating the two identities as opposed to feeling that they're merging or that they're in coalition.
Absolutely, they're in coalition. I don't know. Nobody could speak for Occupy as if it's one.
Well, excuse me. That's one of the problems. Finding spokespeople for Occupy can be very formidable because there are people who just don't want to be the spokespeople for Occupy. They don't want to represent leadership. That's not the
right,
kind of movement it is.
And that's one of the beauties and the strengths of Occupy, to be perfectly honest. And I think I think the real story here, the bigger story, is not the story of division, but the story of unity. And that's what's most exciting about this moment, is that it is bringing together the incredible spirit and passion of Occupy together with organizations, many of whom have membership that may not have been totally comfortable with Occupy's tactics, but really believe in the spirit and the drive and the motivation behind them. And allowing these groups and these individuals to operate together and collaborate in a very real way in the streets, in inside shareholder meetings. I think, you know, personally, I think that Occupy really upped the game in terms of tactics. And I really agree with Jane that it provided some incredible, and still provides some incredible demonstrations of what the power of nonviolent direct action and creative tactics really can have to draw attention to issues, but also to really bring the truth forward and to decision makers.
I want to bring forward another Bay Area participant in the Wells Fargo demonstration. That's Father Richard Smith, who is a reverend of the Episcopal Church of St. John the Evangelist, which is located in the Mission in San Francisco. Father Smith, good to have you with us. Welcome.
Great to be here, Michael. I'm a big fan of your show.
Thank you. I appreciate that, and want my listeners to hear what your involvement is. This is part, you're part of PICO, right?
Yes, I'm part of PICO, which is a national federation of faith-based community organizations. Here in San Francisco, we are, our affiliate is the San Francisco Organizing Project, which is a federation of 30 congregations, Muslim, Jewish, Christian, and yeah, so that's who we are. And we've been working, PICO has been working on the whole financial reform effort since 2008. But, you know, this is just following up on your recent conversation here. I think it wasn't really until Occupy came that the spiritual energy, I'd call it, was in the air that made it really possible for us to move ahead, take giant steps forward with our efforts to get congregations to move their money. And I use my own parish as an example. In the midst of the Occupy experience we were having here in San Francisco, I mentioned to people in my parish, Wells Fargo, where we had our money, was funding detention centers where people from our neighborhood were being deported. And I talked about the abuses that were going on there. And I talked about a member of our parish who is losing her home. It took me about one nanosecond to make the case to our vestry that we need to move our money. I think just a couple of years earlier, I would have had to really do a lot of work to get the point across. But they immediately got it, and I really attribute much of that to Occupy and so, kind of the spiritual energy they created.
So you were out there at the Wells Fargo protest.
I definitely was out there. I had my share in hand. I was standing at the door. I was with everybody saying, let us in, unfortunately to no avail.
And what would you like to see happen?
I would like to see Wells Fargo take responsibility for the pain and the damage that they have caused to millions of people across the country, including in my own community. You know, so far, you know, this is basically ethics 101. So far, every time we've talked to them, they don't get it. I'll give you an example. I was at a meeting a couple of weeks ago in Des Moines, Iowa, with a senior VP of Wells Fargo. This was the highest-ranking executive that we've been able to talk with so far, someone we hope would have power to make a difference. And I should say that before going to that meeting, I had been speaking to a minister who was dealing with a suicide in his congregation because of the stress that that family was under, having lost their home, having lost all of their savings. A tragic suicide had occurred. So I go to this meeting with this senior executive, and he comes into the room and says, let's see, how do I set up my PowerPoint presentation? Please. It just shows how out of touch Wells Fargo executives have become today, I'm sorry to say. They don't get it. So you can't at this stage of the crisis ask us to sit through a PowerPoint lecture. So so I came back from that conversation. I don't know if the word is radicalized or whatever, but I was very angry and very, very frustrated, and I was very happy to be marching along with everybody else in the event on Tuesday to Wells Fargo.
Again, Father Richard Smith with us is Reverend the Episcopal Church of St. John the Evangelist, located in the Mission in San Francisco, and we bring on more callers. We go to Brian. Brian, welcome.
Hello. I just wanted to speak real quickly about the sort of parse the differences between the Occupy movement and then these other groups, like such as the 99% power. I do think there is a coalition there. However, I think Occupy is different in that it's purely grassroots democratic. The other groups, by definition, are not really grassroots. And that the critical difference here is that the Occupy movement, you know, gets much maligned for not having a clear enough direction or being leaderless. But in fact, to make those criticisms is to deny sort of a central principle here, which is that the people are angry, basically. Working class people, especially, are angry. And there's sort of free-floating rage. Maybe they're not very articulate, but they know that they're angry and they have good reason to be angry. And that's what's driving this. And it's sort of a righteous anger. And it's to be expected, frankly. As a matter of fact, if anything, I would say that it's sort of unusual that it took Americans this long to sort of rise up. So insofar that anarchists do, you know, are violent when they glom onto Occupy protests, that's fine. That's whatever. That's people glomming on. But it does not detract from this sort of righteous anger of working people that can't make a living anymore. And anything that anybody that makes apologies for that or tries to detract from that, I think, is just sort of filled with hubris, frankly, because it's, you sort of anger the great middle class working people sort of at your own peril, I think. And I think that's what's sort of risen up here. And I think we should stop being so sort of pig-headed in our insistence that this movement constrain itself to these strange outward things.
Well, Brian, I thank you for your call. And Rebecca Tarbatten, what about that distinction Brian makes of a grassroots movement versus a non-grassroots movement?
I think that's accurate. And as I said earlier on, Occupy really is a people's movement. And, you know, inherently a coalition of institutions isn't going to have the same flavor or the same opportunities and has some other opportunities that a grassroots movement doesn't. So I believe that they are different things, but there's no reason they can't work completely in parallel and towards the same ends. And again, I would reiterate that it's, you know, the bottom line is that we're all working to win real improvements in people's lives and also in the life support systems of the planet to make sure that we have healthy communities for everybody. And at the end of the day, that's what really matters. We can make as many distinctions as we want, but the beauty of all this is that we're pointed in the same direction in a way that we haven't been before, and on a scale that we haven't been before.
Well, you said before that you eschew or certainly are not in any way countenancing violent protest. What about the idea that we're hearing that the Golden Gate Bridge should be blocked as a form of protest?
I haven't actually heard that idea. That would be rather tricky to do, I would suspect. I feel like talking about the tactics actually detracts from really what we're trying to communicate as a coalition. There's any number of ways we can draw attention to these issues, and our creativity is only limited by our numbers. And as our numbers grow, we're going to come out with wilder and more wonderful ways of expressing the concerns and finding ways of bringing those concerns directly to the power holders, which is the corporations.
And again, the plan is to be at Verizon in Alabama May 3rd and the Bank of America in Charlotte, North Carolina, May 9th, and let me go to another caller. Eric, that's you. Welcome. You're on the air, Eric.
Thank you, Michael. I hate to be the black sheep here, but I'm going to give a little different point of view. I basically don't understand where all these movements are leading us to. What do they really want? I hear a lot of generalizations. Okay, the top 1% is so bad, the 99% is great. I'm sorry to say, but a lot of the 99% people work for banks. They're not exactly poor people. The top 1% are people that have worked and busted their you-know-what to get to where they are. They're not all hungry, self-centered bankers out there ripping people off.
Hey, they've Brad Pitt and, a lot of ballplayers are 1%ers, right? If you're just going by income, there are a lot of people who are who have nothing to do with banks or corporations.
If last statistics are right, they pay 30 to 35% of the taxes in this country, funding a lot of social programs in this country. We have the highest corporate tax rate in the world here. I'm sorry to say that. How much more do they want is the big question. Why don't the 99% not worry about the 1% and prove themselves to become maybe only the 1% instead of being envious? It's all I see. These movements to me are just envy. They just want to bring down the 1%. We know if you take all the money of the 1%, it's not going to balance the budget. It has nothing to do with anything productive economically. It's basically a situation where people have had bad situations go on with them. The 1% lost tons of money in the stock markets. They lost a lot of money in stocks, in banks, in various investments. Nobody comes to their aid because they're supposedly the bad 1%. I mean, where do we want to go with this? What do they really want? You want to break down the capitalistic system? What's your answer? Where do you want to go? Look at countries that embraced communism in the past. Where are they today? They're capitalists. They realize that system doesn't work. It's not perfect, but there are flaws, and it can be worked out with no major radicalism. And this lady says, oh, well, it'd be tricky to close on the Golden Gate Bridge. She didn't say, oh, that would be unacceptable. I mean, it's amazing to even think about doing that, disrupting the lives of normal people that try to work every day, pay their taxes, and move on in their life. I'm sorry. It's a little too much.
All right, Erica, thank you for the call, and let's get a response. Maria, would you like to respond to him? Maria Poblet?
Sure. I mean, what the bailout showed, and it's one of the things that has mobilized a lot of people, is not that this is a sort of market-based system and then there's this logic to the market and you can't control the market and you should just adjust and try and figure out what's the best for you and your family. It's actually showing that there is a lot of control that happens and that Wall Street socialized its failure on the back of everyday people. That's what happened. It was a conscious decision. It was a policy decision. And it means that John Stumpf, the CEO of Wells Fargo, makes $17 billion in a year. Meanwhile, after this call, I'm about to go to a mobilization of three families that are fighting U.S. Bank to not become homeless. Now, the moral problem there is not with the three families that are about to become homeless. It's with the banks. How can somebody make $17 billion when they're...
By the way, you're saying billion. It's I think it's million, not billion. I mean, I realize when you get up into those numbers, they seem almost maybe inseparable, millions and billions. But it's.
Thank you for the correction. I have no idea what that even means because in my life, that's not an amount of money that I would ever see or experience. No, and in the life of these three families who are fighting to keep their home against U.S. Bank, what we want, what we need, is some regulation, some defense of those people's lives. Because to say that everybody has to just individually make it on their own is to make invisible the fact that the market is being managed in the interest of the 1%, and that we, the 99%, are standing up for ourselves.
Would you be, Maria, in favor of a Golden Gate Bridge protest to stop the Golden Gate Bridge traffic? As a tactic?
It's not on the agenda. What we're talking about right now is confronting the shareholder meetings across this whole country. That's a huge and powerful statement that the American people demand some change. And it's the kind of statement that people have made throughout the world. The Indignados in Spain, there's even Occupy camps throughout the world. This is actually a worldwide economic crisis, and the solution needs to come from the bottom up. And from the bottom up, it's a little messier, it's a little less 1, 2, 3, 4, but actually it creates a real, much more profound change in hearts and minds and in systems and policies.
Let me go back to Reverend Smith with a listener named Richard, your name also, Reverend Richard Smith, who writes, sorry to have to say it, but your guests are preaching to the choir. All the things they want can be obtained only by congressional action, and Congress is controlled by the Republicans, who will not go for any of these actions. You succeed, they will have to get some Republicans out of office. That means in states other than California. He's got a point, doesn't he?
You're asking me?
Yeah, I'd just like to get your reaction to that, Reverend.
Yeah, thank you. No, it's a point well taken. You know, all of these horrific things that have happened in this country in the last few years, these things, they didn't just happen. This is not like the weather. These things happen because conscious, deliberate decisions were made in corporate boardrooms like those of Wells Fargo. And the decisions that were made in those corporate boardrooms do not reflect the values of the American people. And now it is time for the American people to once again get control of these corporations, not do away with them, but to get control of them once again. You know, it used to be that, for example, you could actually meet with the CEO of your bank. The banks were smaller then. Now we've got these huge monstrosities. It's easier to get an audience with the Pope than it is to get a meeting with John Stumpf. and that's precisely the problem. They've become so isolated and so aloof, they just don't get it. It's what I was trying to say before. So the task is, we need to get control of it. What I'm clear on is that you know, these guys are not going to budge unless they're absolutely forced to. And whether that be through court orders, or whether it be through legislation, or executive orders from the president, or whether it be through people, little people on the street like myself getting out there as we did the other day. The point is, they're going to have to be forced to do what they and we know is the right thing.
All right, so, we're going to have to let it stand there because we've come to the end of the hour. I want to thank all our guests, Father Richard Smith from the Episcopal Church of St. John the Evangelist, Maria Poblet, Executive Director of Just Cause, and Rebecca Tarbatten, who is Executive Director of Rainforest Action Network. Also, Kevin Fagan, who joined us earlier, reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle, and Joseph Grundfest, who also joined us earlier, Frank Professor of Law and Business at Stanford Law School and former Commissioner for the Securities and Exchange Commission. And thank you, our listeners. We wouldn't be here without you. We are here with you every Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeated, 10 to 11 in the evening. And always remind you, you can let us know what you think about what you hear on Forum by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or continue this conversation and post any comments you might have on our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on this segment or go to our Facebook page. Also want to thank everybody responsible for this program, our senior editor, Dan Zoll, and our producers, Judy Campbell and Christina Russo, and our interns, Keith Manconi, Ernesto Morales, Dana Varinsky, and Catalina Villegas. And our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. And for all of us at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, who believe all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.